Call me a heretic, but I think that Abraham failed the test. Right? This patriarch who has been held up for millennia as the faithful example of obedience to God, of the willingness to surrender what matters most, I think he actually failed. Abraham is ready. He's willing. He thinks he hears God calling, and he says, "Here I am." And he goes again and again. He says, "Here I am." But it seems that what Abraham is hearing is informed at least as much by what surrounds him culturally as by the liberating God he seeks to follow. Abraham thinks that God is calling him to give his son as a burnt offering, a sacrifice. Isaac, his beloved, the one who is to carry forward the covenant with God. It is horrifying. And it's possible that it didn't sound quite so shocking to Abraham when he thought he heard this, because it wasn't so beyond comprehension then. It was something you heard about a little bit around the edges, maybe a neighbor the next town over. You were aware of people who believed that their gods were asking this of them. It was sad, but necessary. And so awful as it sounds to us, it wasn't beyond the pale in the way we hear it today. But right from the beginning of the story, there's a clue in the Hebrew that something might be a little bit off. The scholar Paul Nuchtenberg says that the name used for God here in the beginning of the story is Elohim. It's sort of a generic word for God. It means any God or many gods. It's the word that is used in the first commandment, "You shall have no other gods, Elohim, before me." And so the scholar wonders if maybe Abraham is hearing a false god, if maybe he's listening to an idol. We do that, right? We hear that all too often. But he's ready. "Here I am," he says, and sets out. And as he begins this journey, I think about all that has preceded this moment. Right? God has called Abraham out into new lands. He has wandered. He's messed up. But mostly, he's followed with great trust. And he's also duked it out with God. I think back to Sodom and Gomorrah when God was ready to wipe out this whole city because of their wicked lack of hospitality to the stranger, right? Because that's what this story is about. It's about hospitality. And Abraham says, "Hold on. Hold up right there. What if I can find 50 righteous people in the city? Will you hold off then?" And God says, "Okay." And Abraham tries again. "What if I can find 45? What about 40? He's bargaining with God. Abraham gets God all the way down to 10. 10 righteous people is all it's going to take. Abraham is arguing with God to try to save these people. And then I think about the story we get of Abraham and Sarah receiving these holy messengers, right? God's angels showing up saying, "Sarah, you're going to have a baby in your old age." And Sarah gets a bad rap here for laughing in God's face, but it's actually Abraham. Abraham falls on his face first, laughing at God before Sarah does, because it's ridiculous, because he's questioning. And then we come to this place, and there's silence. There's unquestioning obedience. Does this fail the test? It seems like this God actually appreciates when people question and wrestle, right? A little bit later in the story, we'll hear about Abraham's grandson, Jacob, who wrestles an angel all through the night, who wrestles a blessing out of God, is renamed Israel in the process. I wonder if maybe God was looking for a good debate on ritual violence. Or I wonder if maybe God was looking to this patriarch to remind God of God's own abundant mercy. Or if it was a test, I wonder if maybe the test was about discernment, about digging into deep priorities. And instead, it is just so quiet. I don't think that's a good option for us. I don't think we can silently accept this story. We have to ask why. Why did they tell this story? Why do we still tell this story? I mean, really, why? I think back to the earliest days, and these stories, they chronicle people's encounters with the holy. They're trying to make sense of this God they have met. And maybe it's myth. And maybe it's them making meaning of the chaos and the hurt that surrounds them. Maybe some of it factually happened. Some think this story was told again and again actually to work against the sacrifice of children. Others think it was told as a way to teach people about obedience, about fearing God, about being willing to give it all up. There are so many reasons. But for us today, I think we keep telling this story because we are wrestling with these same questions still. What do we do when we are faced with an impossible choice? Whether or not it is posed by God. How do we know when something tremendous is asked of us? How do we respond? And at a most basic, fundamental level, what does all of this tell us about God? Remember, we're in Genesis here. This story is launched by a creative, loving God, someone who works with light, who calls all things good. This is a God who protects even the violent in Cain. This is a God who is willing to turn back and enter into covenant with humankind. And especially as we grapple with this story, this is a God who has promised abundant blessing to Abraham and to all people who follow. This is not a God of violence. This is a God of blessing. And so, who is it that is demanding this violence of Abraham? It's not the God that I know. It's not the God that I put my trust in. I think that he misunderstood. I think that if this was a test, he failed. And he fails all the way up until that last moment up on the mountain. All along we've heard him being guided by this Elohim, this who knows what God. And here at the last moment with the altar piled high and the wood and his son bound, the knife raised, at this moment, Yahweh steps in. Yahweh, the great I am. We hear Yahweh taking action, saying, Abraham, Abraham, do not lay a hand on this boy. And finally, he hears. In this moment, if there was a test, in this moment, he passes. Brian McLaren writes that it is in this awful moment that God steps in and declares that it is not too late. If there is any good news in this horrible story, this is it. It's not too late. It seems like the train has left the station, that everything is just hurling along, right? Abraham's action is fueled by what he thinks God has asked of him and what has been reinforced by the culture around him. And he goes up this mountain, this great trek into the distance with servants and with his son. He gathers stones and wood, and he binds his son. And there, with knife raised, it's all set. And still, it is not too late. As we sit with this scene, as we see these characters in our midst, I wonder, where are you? Where do you find your way into this story? For my part, I think I tend maybe towards Sarah, sort of wondering and back at home. Or maybe with the servants going along, not sure what's going to happen. Or even Isaac, even the ram, but Abraham? Silently obedient, violent, unquestioning. Abraham? Even entertaining the idea turns my stomach, which is maybe a clue to pay attention here, right? It begs a question. What happens if we step into Abraham's place? If we imagine what he sees? I think it brings up more questions than answers, more wrestling maybe than clarity, but they're good questions to ask. How do we think that we hear God or call? How do we respond? And maybe most importantly, how do we sacrifice the vulnerable? How do we sacrifice people? How do we participate in violence and perpetuate violence? Because it seems normal and plenty of people are doing this, or because of apathy, or because we can't see a way out. We do this, right? With our money, with our votes, with our words, maybe especially with our words. We do this. But this story, this horrific story, asks us to stop, to listen again and sift through the ways that we hear God, to wonder if maybe there's another way forward. Because whatever it is, whatever way we feel stuck in this violence, no matter how gripped we are by it, no matter how ingrained these ways may seem, these patterns, no matter how normal it may seem, no matter what damage has been done, it's not too late. Still, we can drop our arm and put down the knife and shuffle back down the mountain. It's not too late. The story calls us to listen again. Because it's not too late to wrestle. It's not too late to question. It's not too late to turn back from our violent ways. It's not too late.